Well, get ready because it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here, still in Sydney, Australia, in the midst of a great Jewish evangelism conference where Jewish ministry leaders from different parts of Australasia have come together to update, to encourage one another, and I'm getting to be the principal speaker, sharing, encouraging with them. So having a great time here, and the next 2 days, the Wednesday and Thursday broadcast, my dear friend, Dr. Frank Turek, is going to be guest hosting. So that means I would miss on the Line of Fire this week, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So I decided to switch it over to Tuesday. I won't be taking calls just like yesterday, but I've got a lot of neat things to share with you, some interesting information, some eye-opening insights, as always, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Okay, before I get into the Jewish focus on today's broadcast, today's the day where hundreds of evangelical leaders from around the country are scheduled to meet with Donald Trump, or are scheduled to have met with Donald Trump today. I did get an invitation through a colleague to be there, and I would have gone if not for being in Australia. I read an article on National Review by David French urging evangelical leaders not to bow the knee to Donald Trump, or not to buy into what's heard and to recognize who he is and why he's a bad candidate, etc., and that the church is here not primarily to vote for someone or to get someone into presidency, but to reach the lost and to feed the poor and to stand for righteousness in every area of society, etc. He makes a lot of great points, and of course I have grave concerns concerning Donald Trump. If he ends up being our president, then as I've said many a time, and I'll say it again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I get to eat my words. That would bring me great joy. I would hate to say I told you so. I mean that from the heart. I would just say this, though. My expectation at this meeting is that not a lot can come out of it. I've gotten emails from leaders going, and they said, please pray that we can really make our concerns known to Donald Trump and convey where we stand. Well, when you have hundreds and hundreds of people, only a precious few will able to speak or convey things. But bottom line, I believe there have been a good number of solid evangelical leaders who've met with Donald Trump, some of them one-on-one, shared the gospel with him. I believe others have access to him that can make him understand what our concerns are. I believe he understands those concerns, and I believe that he believes he wants to help us with those concerns. And I believe in that setting that he would be very gracious and very humble and very honoring. In other words, I don't think anything's going to be learned from it personally. Now, some might say, well, being with him, we really got better discernment or insight. Hey, so be it. I would have gone just to see what was happening, to see who was there, to get a feel for it, and certainly to take advantage of an opportunity like that. But I do have friends that have met with him one-on-one or in small groups, and some have prayed for him. And my impression, again, is that you'd come away from that meeting hearing what you wanted to hear, because that's what he would be affirming, because he does believe that he would be a champion of the evangelical Christians. So that's just my take on it. If people came away now, this is our man, and then they're all enthusiastically getting behind him based on a meeting like that, to me, that would be misguided. Not to say they shouldn't get behind him, not to say they shouldn't vote for him. And where I'm at right now is I'm going to do what I do before the Lord. Where I'm at right now, who I vote for, who I don't vote for, I'm going to do that before the Lord and encourage you to make your best decision. I'm not campaigning in any particular direction at this moment. Just want that to be known, except I can assure you that I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton if she is the candidate. Okay, enough with American politics. When we come back, though, I want to talk about Islam in America, something very, very interesting that I've recently learned, and something interesting in the news in the last 24 hours. We'll be right back on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday here on The Line of Fire. Give up.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is your friendly voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, Michael Brown. If you're just tuning in, it's Tuesday, but we're doing our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast today, Tuesday, because Dr. Frank Turek is guest hosting for me tomorrow and Thursday, and then I'll be back again with you on Friday and Monday, and back in the States, God willing, on Tuesday. So keep praying for me here in Australia. We've got, today, Tuesday, so Wednesday, Thursday, still in Sydney, then fly over to Melbourne, then I think I speak 9 times in 3 days in Melbourne, and in particular, we've got a Saturday night Jewish outreach. We'll be right in the heart of a Jewish community in Melbourne. I'm talking about, is Jesus kosher for the Jewish people? I believe it's going to be a real eye-opening presentation. There's going to be a live web feed, so it'll be, the very, very early morning hours in the state, or the middle of the night for some of you in the States. But please be praying that God would draw Jewish people to the meeting, that their hearts would be open. All I want to present to them is the truth. I'm not trying to twist anything. I'm not trying to manipulate something. I'm not trying to paint a misleading picture. I just want to present the truth about Jesus Yeshua to our Jewish people. Okay, I mentioned on the broadcast yesterday that Loretta Lynch had announced that the tape that would be released, or the transcript that would be released of one of the 9/11 calls by the murderer in Orlando, Omar Mateen, that it would be scrubbed, that it would not have certain references to Islam in it. You think, what in the world are you talking about? Well, that's what was going to happen. Now, this is utterly bizarre. And this is what has been officially reported, all right? And this is what the FBI and the Department of Justice said, because they ended up releasing an unedited transcript of one of the calls where he pledges allegiance to ISIS. And they said the purpose of releasing the partial transcript of the shooter's interaction with 9/11 operators was to provide transparency while remaining sensitive to the interest of the surviving victims, their families, and the integrity of the ongoing investigation. We also did not want to provide the killer or terrorist organizations with a publicity platform for hateful propaganda. Unfortunately, the unreleased portions of the transcript that name the terrorist organizations and leaders have caused an unnecessary distraction from the hard work that the FBI and our law enforcement partners have been doing to investigate this heinous crime. As much as this information had been previously reported, we have reissued the complete transcript to include these references in order to provide the highest level of transparency possible under the circumstances. With all respect to the Department of Justice and the FBI, we all knew it was reported. It was reported and verified that he pledged allegiance to ISIS in his phone calls. Everybody knew that. Everybody heard that. Nobody was disputing that. To leave that out from the transcripts, how does that protect the family or the interest of the surviving victims or the integrity of the ongoing investigation? Or I don't buy that at all, to be honest with you. Something smells fishy to me that we just didn't want to mention ISIS because it's radical Islam. So here is what happens. 2:35 a.m. The shooter contacts 9/11 operator from inside Pulse, the gay bar. The call lasted approximately 50 seconds. So the Orlando police dispatcher responds, and then Omar Mateen speaks, and he says, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. He says it in the name of God, the Merciful, the Beneficent in Arabic. The operator says, what? So then he says it again in Arabic, praise be to God, alhamdulillah, praise be to God, and prayers as well as peace be upon the Prophet of God. This is all in Arabic. Then he says, I want to let you know I'm in Orlando and I did the shootings. They say, what's your name? He said, my name is, I pledge of allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi of the Islamic State. Okay, what's your name? He says, I pledge allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. May God protect him on behalf of the Islamic State. All right, where are you at? In Orlando. Where in Orlando? And then it's the end of the call. All right, so they, when they initially published the transcript. It just says, I pledge allegiance to, and it doesn't say the rest. I mean, somebody write to me if I'm missing something. Somebody write to me if indeed there's some legitimate reason to leave that out. But that seems utterly bogus. I can't tell you how wrong that seems, and I'm glad they at least released it. But now it drew a whole lot more attention. Now, one other question. God knows Loretta Lynch's heart. God knows where she's at in terms of Israel, where she's at in terms of Islam. I don't imply in any way, shape, size, or form that she's a Muslim, that the thought never entered my mind. But there's a report that I read from November 12th of 2014. You can find it on gotnews.com. Loretta Lynch belonged to Jew-hating, pro-terrorist Harvard group. According to this report, Attorney General Attorney General Loretta Lynch belonged to a student group that brought Jew-hating Palestinian terrorists to Harvard Law School every year she was a member. Lynch belonged to the Harvard Black Law Students Association from 1981 to 1984 when she was a student. Now you might say, well, Mike, that's perfectly natural. She was a black woman and a law student at Harvard, so she belonged to that group. Maybe it's very widespread. Maybe that's very common. I don't know statistically how many black students were there and how many were part of that were in law school. But according to this article, during those years, the radical black group brought representatives from the PLO. The group's leader, Mohammed Kenyatta, called for the liberation of Palestine and expressed support for the terrorist organization. The group, the Harvard Black Law Students Association, BLSA, defended bringing the terrorists in a letter to the editor of the Harvard student newspaper, the Harvard Crimson. Jewish student organizations protested the speeches, especially in 1984. Liberal professor Alan Dershowitz joined the anti-PLO protests, and the Harvard Crimson condemned the response of Lynch's organization in 1984. The Black Law Students Association committed an unjustifiable and discriminatory violation of student liberties last week when it denied Jewish students an opportunity to participate in a campus forum featuring a representative of the PLO. More than 30 Jewish law students from the association attended the panel discussion, so they were Jewish Law Students Association. They attended the panel discussion, outnumbering the members of the Black Law Students and the Third World Coalition, the event sponsors. But after opening the forum to questions from the floor, the black student moderator, Muhammad I. Kenyatta, refused to recognize any of the white hands raised in the audience, etc., etc. Now, I have no idea whatsoever if this influenced Loretta Lynch in her thinking. No idea whatsoever. Simply report what was in the news a couple of years ago and was brought to my attention. But this much we do know. With consistency, our administration is taking this radical leftist mentality that basically looks at conservative Christianity as more of a threat than radical Islam. Therefore, we continue to pray for our administration, and we continue to pray that our law enforcement agencies would be able to do everything they need to do to fight terrorism in America. And whatever quarter it was coming from, it needs to be fought. Listen, in all candor, I know this is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday, but let me just stay with this one thought for one more moment. When I rebuked Pastor Stephen Anderson's words rejoicing in the Orlando massacre, I read some of the responses to that I got on internet. And of course, overwhelmingly, people are appreciating it and thanking me for speaking up. And by the way, this is not some courageous thing to do. I mean, any Christian with a conscience is going to say something if it comes to their attention, especially if you have a platform as we have. But I just want to say this. I don't think it was some courageous or big thing to do. It was the least that I can do. But when I'm looking right now on my YouTube channel, out of the 13,000 plus views it has or whatever the current number is up to, last time I looked, the likes were 436. The dislikes were 42. That's troubling to me. That's troubling to me that there were 42 that watched it and differed with what I had to say. In other words, there is a fringe, a tiny minority fringe, but it's a hateful fringe. It's a fringe that misuses the scriptures. It's a fringe that abuses the truth of God. It's a fringe that is so heavily judgmental that if the same standards were held on itself, it would be destroyed in a moment. Oh, it's not calling for the murder of gays or lesbians or others, but it's rejoicing in their death and saying they deserve to die because of the death penalty in the Bible for homosexual practices. I've said before, we better repent in a hurry with that kind of attitude, because there's a whole lot of things in the Old Testament for which God prescribed death penalties under the theocracy with Israel, called to him in that sense, in that state, and that by grace, that death penalty is not hanging over us now, especially if we are in the Lord. That concerns me. We need to renounce this stuff as clearly as we can.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Sydney, Australia. Michael Brown, it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday. Let me give you some news from America that's encouraging in terms of the Jewish people. Are you all familiar with the BDS movement? Boycott, divestment, sanctions against Israel. It's a movement calling for companies not to work with Israel, calling for them to pull their money out of Israel. Different organizations, different church denominations have gotten involved with this. This is supposedly for justice for the Palestinians. Several studies have demonstrated that this ends up hurting the Palestinians more than anybody. But in almost every case, it is ugly. It's ugly in every case, but in some cases it's just downright anti-Semitic and completely biased, and with no sense of overall justice whatsoever. I could say that it's evil and needs to be opposed, while at the same time saying let's do whatever we can for the good of the Palestinians. Well, different states now are passing anti-boycott legislation bills. So the Anti-Discrimination in State Contracts Act was passed June 16th by the Rhode Island House in a 63-4 vote, and in concurrence 2 days later by the state senator, Governor Gina Raimondo. By the state senate, and Governor Gina Raimondo is expected to sign the legislation making it law. Several states have passed anti-BDS legislation, including Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and South Carolina. And New York Governor Andrew Cuomo recently signed an executive order opposing the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. In total, 21 states have taken up anti-BDS legislation. That's a good sign. For whatever reason, with all the things that America gets wrong, we're still getting some of this right, and that is important. Again, it doesn't mean we don't care about the Palestinians, but it means we will not work unjustly against Israel. More news from Israel. As money continues to flood in to the Gaza Strip, and money is coming in from international aid to help the Palestinians in Gaza, as money continues to pour in, very little of it actually gets to the needy Palestinians. Very little of it gets to them to rebuild the schools, the houses, the apartment buildings, the places that were torn up by the last war as Israel attacked Hamas. Very little of it gets to the people themselves. You say, where does the money go? Well, some of it goes into the pockets of corrupt leaders, and a lot of it goes for military infrastructure, and a lot of it goes for building terror tunnels to get under Israel. I mean, this is on an ongoing level. A number of them collapsed recently, and was it they just happened to collapse, or Israel was better finding a better chance of having a better chance of locating them, and then while locating them, blowing them up, and that's being debated. But what we do know is this, that Israel is continuing to look for ways to stop these terror tunnels from being built. So tons of concrete that could be used to rebuild schools and rebuild apartment buildings and provide for these needy Palestinians in Gaza. where the unemployment rate is massively high. I mean, it's a total mess under Hamas. You can't blame Israel for the fact that the people voted Hamas into leadership, and because of that, Israel marks them as terrorists and is going to deal with them accordingly. Well, Israel is now building an anti-terror tunnel wall, okay? This is their, right now, their best way of stopping the tunnels, and this wall is going down tens of yards into the ground. It's intended to block these tunnels. It's going to be built entirely on Israel's side of the border. Well, Palestinian leadership has been crying foul. They're saying that the wall would cause environmental damage. In an interview published on Sunday by the Palestine newspaper, a Hamas mouthpiece, Gaza environmentalists warned that the security wall would block groundwater from Israel moving into the Gaza Strip. This, they claim, would prevent the replenishment of underground aquifers and force Gazans to draw more heavily from alternative sources. The experts cited in the interview also suggested that the wall could cause cave-ins along the border. You know there's a solution. Of course, Israel would deny that there's going to be environmental damage with this, I would suppose. But there is a simple solution, a very, very simple solution, which is stop building the terror tunnels. Stop building the terror tunnels. Can I remind you that one particular incident, there are tunnels that were dug to come right out under an Israeli school or right next to an Israeli school with little school children. And the terrorists involved, they had all kinds of things that from what the Israelis could tell, their goal was to kidnap the children, to the tranquilizers and things like that, syringes and all this stuff to try to kidnap as many as I mean, you're talking about a horrific act of terror. And not just targeting military outposts or things like that, but targeting children's schools. So the Palestinians are victims of corrupt leadership. They have been victims of corrupt leadership for decades, and if not totally corrupt leadership, leadership that has not had their best interests in mind, and leadership that in many cases is part and parcel, hand in hand with radical Islam. So if you want to see peace for the Palestinians, don't just put the onus on Israel. Pray for righteous Palestinian leadership that to be raised up that would care more for the people than for a radical ideology. And as Golda Meir urged years back that the wars would cease when the Muslim nations would love their children more than they hated the Israeli children. They'd love their people more than they hated Israel. If they did that, they could make choices so that hand in hand with Israel, they could live in peace and prosperity. All right, friends, I get questions constantly sent to me about Bible translations. And as a student of the scripture and a student of the original languages, I love, love, love reading the Bible in different translations and comparing versions. It was one of the great joys in writing my Job commentary, which should be out by the fall of next year, to look at the many different ways that translators wrestle with difficult verses and things like that. So a few years back, I was introduced to the Modern English Version, which is the newest and, in my mind, the best modern version of the Bible in the spirit of the King James. So if you love the King James, the feel of the King James, the way the language flows, and if you're comfortable with those manuscripts for the New Testament and feel that they best represent the ancient texts, the New King James was important and is still widely used, but I think the Modern English Version goes one step further. So it's one of the Bibles that we distribute along with the Tree of Life translation, the wonderful Messianic Jewish translation that we distribute, that I was a part of that translation team. But if you love the King James, get your copy of the Modern English Version. We have a special resource offer this week. When you buy it, we'll pay the postage. It's a great slimline edition. We'll pay the postage and we'll send you my DVD testimony from LSD to PhD. So go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of it. Check out latest articles and videos too.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the line of fire. This day, this Tuesday, is Thursday. You say, what do I mean? It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday. You'll be enjoying my guest host, Dr. Frank Turek, tomorrow and Thursday. So Wednesday and Thursday of this week, I'm in Sydney, Australia right now. Not able to take your calls, but catching up on the news, sharing what's happening here, and transforming our Tuesday broadcast into Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, because I didn't want to miss a Thursday broadcast with you. And with my guest host filling in for me, I wanted to make sure that we had a Jewish day this week. So we're doing it today on Tuesday. So here in Sydney, Australia, earlier today, really a delightful, delightful meeting as I'm speaking at a conference. It's a small gathering of leaders, especially from New Zealand and Australia. There may be some other places represented, but they're involved in Jewish ministry, Jewish outreach in particular. And heard a great testimony from an Israeli man. He got saved while backpacking through New Zealand many years ago. Israelis are very adventurous. Israelis travel around the world. And the time that most of them in particular will travel out is when they finish serving in the military. All women must serve for 2 years, men for 3 years. There are certain exemptions. Religious Jews don't have to serve and things like that, although there's continual battle over that in the government. But basically, everybody serves in the military. So they do that before going to college. So many of them, when they finish the military, they then go out traveling. And then they'll come and do their college, or they'll do military, then college, and then travel. But especially in their 20s, early to mid-20s, that they're traveling around the world, and they like to go to places where they can backpack. There's a large number of Israelis that go to places like Nepal, often on spiritual quests and seeking and things like that. And New Zealand and Australia are English-speaking countries that are suitable for backpacking adventurers, and hence many Israelis will go there. So this brother has a great ministry, and what he does is this. He works with Christians all over the country. Now they've expanded into Australia, and he works together with them and gets Christian homes where they will open up their homes to Israelis, and the Israelis stay with them. And Israelis are also very social people, so most are happy if they can save money, because a lot of them are young, they don't have a lot of money, they've got to fly and travel and make their way around to these different places. So they stay in these homes basically for free, or at the absolute minimum charge or something like that, and they just get to be around Christians. And these Christians just do what they do. They just love on them. They're just genuine, they're just authentic, they just live out who Jesus is. They welcome them in. They don't ask anything from them, require anything from them. I don't know how long they stay, but some will stay longer than others. And this way, they don't have to pay for hotel and accommodations. And why are you doing this? Well, we're Christians, and we love the Jewish people. We're Christians, and we love Israel. It's a great ministry. It's a great way to expose young seeking Israelis, young open Israelis, to Christian love. And again, it's believers doing what believers do. It's not putting on an act. It's not putting on a show. It's being who they are. Just like years ago, the late 70s, early 80s, the church I was part of, almost all of us in the congregation, opened our home to take refugees in from Southeast Asia. Why? Because we heard there was a terrible need. And they fled as Vietnam fell, when America pulled out. They fled. They were living in refugee camps. Some of them suffered terribly. Maybe half of them died at sea in the boat people crisis as they escaped. And they were in refugee camps until they could get sponsors. So when we heard about this, our pastor said, we're going to do something, and we did. Why? Because that's what Christian did. And some of them, they lived with us for years. Our houses were filled with refugees. We had more refugees in the home than kids, our own family. Why? Because that's what believers do. So what a great, neat ministry. What a great opportunity.
The world. Join Dr. Michael Brown along with Messianic Jewish pastor Scott Volk for a unique behind-the-scenes tour of Israel, February 25th through March 6, 2017. Space is limited, so we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip and to secure your spot, please visit our website at AskDrBrown.org and click on the Israel Tour banner or call our office at 704-782-3760.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to read to you from Psalm 126. This is a psalm with some very familiar words in it. And as I read from this, you heard our ad for Israel. Again, I really hope you can join us. I've been thinking more and more about this trip as I'm in Sydney, Australia, at these special meetings. I've been preaching in some churches and then doing some other teaching, Jewish lectures and talks, and now meeting with Jewish believers and others who are involved in Jewish outreach, especially in Australia and New Zealand, and some other parts of the world as well. And the more I think about being back in Israel, man, my heart is beating. I'm excited about it. And as I said, as we've announced the trip, and again, we're doing Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday of this week. When I announced our first tour, I was excited about it, but I'm really careful about your money. You know, when we urge you to give and support us, we are super frugal. We are super careful with funds. When we have special resource offers, we're always looking for the best way to get things into your hands. And when I saw the price of the tour, I knew it was a good price, but I hadn't led a tour myself. I knew people would be impacted, but I didn't realize the level to which they'd be impacted until we went. And then once we went and I started adding up, I thought, wow, this is a great price. The accommodations were better than I was expecting, the meals better than I was expecting, the fullness of the tour better than I was expecting, people impacted more than I was expecting. Then when I looked at what others were charging, other major ministries, I thought, this is a great deal. I thought, if we do this again, I'm going to be even more enthusiastic about it. So if funds are the big issue, pray that the Lord would make the way and then get your down payment in, and you will not be disappointed. February 25th to March 6th of next year. And you know how time flies. Before you know it, we'll be on that bus together. Before you know it, we'll be standing together at Mount Carmel, and I'll be doing a talk about Elijah calling down fire from heaven. Or we'll be in the River Jordan, you know, or on the Sea of Galilee. So, or you'll be sitting out on a radio broadcast I'm doing from Israel. So pray with us and join us if you can. All the information is at AskDrBrown.org. So Psalm 126, a song of ascent. So as they would go up, make their way in pilgrimage up to the city of Jerusalem, this song would be sung. When the Lord restores the fortunes of Zion, we see it as in a dream. Our mouths shall be filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then they shall say among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord will do great things for us, and we shall rejoice. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like watercourses in the Negev. They who sow in tears shall reap with songs of joy. Though he goes along weeping, carrying the seed bag, he shall come back with songs of joy, carrying his sheaves. I spoke about that passage briefly last night in our meeting here in Sydney, Australia. And I was talking about having a greater burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You know, we can, those of us who are into sports, the home team loses, and maybe you were rooting for Golden State against Cleveland, and Golden State loses a close game, and they end up with, you know, the greatest season in NBA history, regular season, but then they lose in the playoffs, and they lose the seventh game at home, and they lose three straight games. The first time that happened in the finals, that a team came back from 3-1, and oh, it was so close, and oh, if they just hit a few shots, and oh, you might be so upset, and it almost hurts. I've had that happen with sports in the past, but really, it's not right. I mean, it's just a game, ultimately. It's just a game. There are other things that merit that kind of pain. And I'm not saying you're wrong or you're sinning if you get into sports that much. I'm just saying it doesn't really make sense. It's just a game for us to get into it so emotionally. And yet, we can be so gripped with that, or there are other things that get our attention. Or you're watching some fictional series on TV, and you know, something terrible happens and you're heartbroken. It's just a fictional series. Where we should really be burdened is for souls. Where we should really be burdened is for people who don't know the Lord. And Paul was so burdened for the salvation of his people Israel that he said in Romans 9 that he had continual sorrow. He had unceasing anguish, and he said, I'm telling you the truth. I mean, he made it as clear as he possibly could. I'm telling you the absolute truth without any exaggeration. I am continually in pain, an unceasing anguish and sorrow for my people. I wish them to be saved. I would rather not have that pain, to be candid with you. I would rather not have that burden. I would rather not have that grief. I would rather be happy-go-lucky. I'd rather skip my way through the day. I'd rather, there's a time to dance and a time to rejoice. I'd like that to be all the time. I don't want the time to mourn. I mean, that's just my human nature. Jesus said, though, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And Psalm 126, speaking from the point of view of the exiles in Babylon, either when the Lord brought them back to the land, so when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, then we were like those who dreamed, our mouths were filled with laughter, or when the Lord does restore, then this is how we'll respond. In that very psalm, it says, those who sow in tears shall reap with songs of joy. Though he goes along weeping, carrying the seed bag, he shall come back with songs of joy, carrying his sheaves. And I wondered over the years when I read that passage, I'd think about it, then I'd forget to study it, and I'd wonder, why would someone sow seeds weeping? Why would you be sowing seeds weeping? Now, there could be any number of reasons. One rabbinic interpretation says it's speaking figuratively of Israel doing works of righteousness, sowing seeds of righteousness and good deeds while in Babylonian captivity. They did it with tears. Another commentator said, no, it's speaking about when the exiles returned, when they returned from captivity, and they were sowing their seed, the land was so parched, and it seemed that there was no possible way that they could reap a harvest from this land that hadn't been worked or plowed or used for decades, and now they're trying to get it usable again, so it's so tedious and it seems so hopeless, so they would sow with tears. That could be. You know, you could also sow with tears because you remember what you lost. You sow with tears because you remember the way it used to be. And it's not like that anymore. There are any number of reasons, potentially, but what's clear is those who sow with tears reap with joy. And that those of us who carry a burden for souls, those of us who are burdened to pray for the lost, those of us who carry a burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, as we sow with tears, we will reap with joy. And can I tell you candidly, what breaks my heart more than anything in Jewish ministry? I grieve for lost Jewish people that are secular, that are worldly, that are pursuing the flesh, that are pursuing other religions and faiths, that have completely departed from Judaism, you know, that have maybe gone the way of Buddhism or Hinduism or things like that, or the secular worldly Jews that are as carnal as anybody else. Yeah, I grieve for that. I remember our first trip in Israel, we drove down this one area, and to our shock, it was red light district. I mean, prostitution is a real problem, an issue with that in Israel. I grieve over those things. But what breaks my heart the most is being with religious Jews. Look, there are hypocrites, just like there are hypocrites in the church, there are hypocrites in the synagogue. But there are many who are deeply sincere. And as Paul spoke of having a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge, deeply devoted, from the moment they wake up in the morning to the moment they fall asleep at night as Jews wanting to please God and praying prayers that would tear at your heart and prayers with beautiful words for the redemption of Israel and asking God for mercy and asking God to send the Messiah. I'm not going to have time to share the story of this segment. I'll do it in the next segment. But many years ago, while living on Long Island in probably my late 20s, early 30s, reading through the Hebrew prayer book, I was just so struck for my people. And among the religious Jews, I have a whole chapter in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, which came out in 1992 and has been in print ever since. So near and yet so far. So near and yet so far. My prayer is that God would break your heart with a burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel, that together we would reap with great, great joy. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming away from Sydney, Australia, doing Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday. Hope that doesn't confuse your equilibrium from the week. I want to share a story with you on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Tuesday. I'm sure at one point or another I must have shared this on the air. I don't remember when, but I want to share it with you again just to give you some of my heart for my people. And I believe that when Paul said in Romans 1 that the gospel is to the Jew first and also to the Greek, that remains God's heart, that it should always be the burden of God's people to bring the gospel message to the Jewish people. After all, it is the message of their Messiah and their God. And Paul says in Romans 11, it's true that the natural olive branches, in his figure of speech there in Romans 11, they were cut off, and in place, branches from a wild olive tree were grafted in. The Gentiles from a wild olive tree were grafted in, as opposed to coming from the natural cultivated olive tree, the Jewish branches. But then he said, look, if you could be grafted in, Gentiles, how much more readily will they be grafted back into their own tree? So to the extent that we preach the message of the Jewish Messiah, true to biblical form, that's something that's very natural for Jewish people to turn to. That's what Paul writes. And it's just a divine priority to the Jew first. And therefore, I encourage every church, every ministry to be praying for the salvation of Israel, to be involved in witnessing and reaching out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, to be supporting those of us who are on the front lines of reaching the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I believe this is very dear to God's heart. And you say, well, what's the advantage? Well, aside from being obedient to God and also saying, hey, we've received grace from the Jewish Messiah, let's give grace back to the Jewish people. Let's remember also that according to Paul in Romans 11, Israel's salvation will be in life from the dead. That Israel's salvation is critically important for the salvation of the world and for the return of the Messiah. But perhaps this story will also help you grow in your burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. It was in October of 1988, I was doing a Jewish outreach in Cleveland together with, Cleveland that now won the NBA championship, that same Cleveland. I was doing an outreach in Cleveland with Israel's Hope, so Paul Wilbur, Mark Chapinsky, Renee Block, the famous Messianic Jewish worship group then. They were going to lead in worship, and I was going to preach, and the goal was to reach out to Jewish people. Now, the meetings were held in a building that was an open to the public building, could be rented for different occasions. A pretty big building, maybe it seated 1,000 people, something like that. But it used to be a synagogue. And when Paul Wilbur had been a boy living in Cleveland, that's the synagogue that he went to. So they ministered in music, and then I preached. And the Saturday night meeting, when the meeting was going on, it was now after Shabbat. It was the fall. It was 1988. So it was after Sabbath. So that meant that religious Jews, if they wanted to come in, and we had gotten word out somehow, they knew about the meetings. So next thing, as I'm preaching, these religious Jewish men, men with long beards and the black hats and coats, they start coming into the meeting. So I preached my heart out. And then I gave an altar call for people to respond. And then those in need of healing or a touch from God, I laid hands on them. And the Holy Spirit was visibly touching people. And there were religious Jews up there watching. They wanted to see what's our trick or how are we doing this. And it was absolutely amazing opportunity to minister in the presence of the Spirit. Well, they then started challenging me, you know, what are you doing in here? You should be with our people. This is not where you belong. You should be with our people. So I went outside the meeting as other things were still going on inside the building. The night was over for me as far as ministry. I went outside the building here in Cleveland. I go outside, and they're now starting to gather and do a post-Shabbat service, Motzei Shabbat service, and lighting candles. And some of the, they started lighting these candles. There were police outside just monitoring what was going on. And some reacted like, what's going on? I said, it's just a traditional service they're doing. That's all. And then a group of them started dancing in a circle. And some of them said, why, you should dance with us. You don't want to be with these guys, with these Christians. You should be with us. You should dance with us. So I thought, I'm going to dance with my people. Why not? So I go down the steps of the synagogue, the former synagogue, and we're arm in arm and we're circle dancing. And picture this, I mean, only in Jewish ministry. And some of the guys are challenging me. Well, who was this one? Do you know who that one was? What did this one say? In other words, to see how much I knew about Hebrew or about the Hebrew scriptures or about the rabbinic commentators and things like that. And it's kind of a wild scene, but I was a fairly young man there, 1988, with 33 years old. But we were dancing and dancing, and one by one, they were getting tired and dropping out. Another would join in, and I just had this supernatural energy, and I was challenging them, come on, where's your zeal for our God? Let's dance to God. Where's our zeal for your zeal for God? So, I mean, this went on for a while, and then the circle broke up, the dancing broke up, and they began to pray. And there we are on the streets, okay? It's evening. It's an October evening. We're standing on the streets outside this building, and they begin to lift their hands to the heavens and say, oh, God, send Mashiach, the Hebrew way of saying Messiah. Oh, God, send Mashiach now. Send Mashiach now. And I'm standing right with them, and I start yelling, oh, God, show them that Mashiach has come. Yes, Lord, send Mashiach again. Send Mashiach again. And they start yelling, no, not that Mashiach, the real Mashiach. And I'm saying, God, open their eyes to see that Yeshua is the real Mashiach. And we're crying out to heaven side by side. And I ended up talking to some of the rabbis there late. You know, I remember my feet just kind of getting frozen cold because it was getting late and we were just outside for a long time. I got back to my room and my heart was just torn. Oh, it was torn. Because here I was with these sincere Jews crying out for Messiah, convinced that Jesus wasn't the Messiah and couldn't be the Messiah, anyone but him almost. And my heart was just torn and broken. Oh, for the lost sheep of the house of Israel to be saved. Would you join me in praying for the salvation of the Jewish people? Would you join me in praying for fruitful efforts as we reach out and for more and more doors to open? And if you're unable to support us, would you pray for support? Would you pray for provision? If you're unable to support us yourselves financially, would you pray for divine provision to reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel? There are many programs we want to implement. We have so many materials. We want to get out more, especially in Israel, especially in Hebrew. We can do it with your help to partner with us. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate, and your gift of any size we will specifically use for Jewish ministry. It would be a great blessing to us and to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. If you're unable to partner with us, please pray. And I share this more for prayer support than anything else. And ask God to share his heart with you for the salvation of his people, Israel. Remember to check out our special resource offer, the MEV Bible, Thin Line Bible, with a free DVD of my testimony. My bottom line, yes, you should have a burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. It's something that Jesus the Messiah carries to this day.